Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
All right, you're very welcome along. If you want to get involved in the conversation this evening, by the way, of course, you can always text the show on 53106. You can WhatsApp us now, 0879 180 180. And I'm very happy to say, alongside Nathan, Jonathan Walters is with us. Jonathan, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Afternoon. Good, good. How are yourself?
Yeah, I'm all right. We're all kind of trying to deal with what is the new normal. There's been a slightly different approach here than there has been there, and things have got pretty bad for large swathes of the population in England over the last 10 days in particular. How has it affected you? How are you getting on?
I'm not too bad. I've got three kids, so they're all different ages, 15, 11 and 9, so the eldest is more, you know, they've all been set work from the school, following sort of the same timetable as what they normally do, and then I'm on a 2-week break for Easter now. The headmaster's on a break for 2 weeks, so I'm off from homeschooling for 2 weeks now. And no, I'm not too bad. Look, it's about the kids and getting into a routine of trying to look after, you know, the people that live close to you and family.
What kind of a teacher is Jonathan Walters?
One that goes missing quite a lot and lets a wife do most of the teaching.
Any favourite subjects that you're particularly? Let's do a little bit of extra English.
I'm the maths teacher. I'm the maths, and I'm a pretty good PE teacher as well. So it's been good. It's been something a little bit different. I love being at home anyway. I like the kids being at home, so it's been okay for me so far. So good.
Was kicking off, Jonathan, a couple of weeks ago, and here in Ireland, the teenagers of the country became a real lightning rod for criticism because quite difficult to keep them indoors for long periods and social distancing and keeping them away from their friends. And there was a lot of gatherings and a lot of people getting annoyed. How's it trying to deal with a 15-year-old who can't go outside the door really for, well, a couple of weeks at this stage and probably several months?
She loves being on her own. She loves a bit of, they say, you say FOMO, don't need the teenagers now, fear of missing out. She's got JOMO, she has joy of missing out. So she's quite a bookworm. She likes her schoolwork and has a close knit of friends. But she's missing her sport. That's what she's missing, I think, the most, and a few of her closer friends. But it's a difficult one when you said with kids. When we were that age, we all thought we knew best. So it's a difficult one. But now it's more serious. And the seriousness of what's actually happening has been happening over the past week or two. Look back a few weeks ago and you look at the Madrid game against Liverpool at Anfield, and they allowed thousands of fans go to Anfield when it was all going on, and Madrid was the epicenter of an outbreak, and Cheltenham, 250,000 people going, it's ridiculous. If you look back at that now and the seriousness of what we're in.
It is ridiculous, and it is awful that this is now what we're all going to look back on and kind of try and work out exactly what damage was done, and eventually we're going to be able to tot up numbers, and it's even a horrific thing to be talking about. And yet, at the same time, while this is happening, there are conversations happening simultaneously about the return of football, and I can see why those conversations are happening, because we do want some form of normality to return to our lives. We do want some sense that all that stuff that we volunteered with our spare time to get into, for you it was a career, for us it was watching football as kids and falling in love with the sport, we really want that to come back because it was such an important part of our lives.
I think it's a normality for everyone. I think football is the one sport across the world that unites countries, race, gender, everything. It unites the world in a way no other thing does. And I think everyone would like to focus on something about that normality back. But, you know, first and foremost, you know, you want that back. But, yeah, there's so much going on and things you don't really want to talk about too much, because you seem as if you're not taking, you're focusing on that. But, yeah, look, it's such a big part of people's lives. And, you know, it'd be nice to get back on, because when we do, we know We'll be out the back end of it, which we will be at some point. We've got a couple of weeks, especially here, we've got a few weeks of it getting really bad, I think. I think we're starting to hit serious numbers now. Every day it seems to be increasing. I think we're still a week away in London, I think, at the moment, so 2 weeks away from a peak, and then it's going to move around the country in different areas. So I just expect it to get a lot worse before it gets better. But as you said, when we do start speaking about football being back on the TV, then I think that's when we'll be out the back end of it.
It has been interesting to see how the conversation around football has developed over the last, well, particularly the last 48 hours, but even over the last couple of weeks. All the talk was about the games and getting the games back and beginning of May, end of May, but getting players back on the pitch and these ideas of going to the Midlands, a World Cup style experience where players are segregated for 2-3 weeks and playing the games off over 10 days and just getting it done and it being this made for TV experience. And it was all football conversation. Whereas then this week it turned to more the business side and probably started with Tottenham furloughing 700 of their staff, a couple more clubs followed suit, and suddenly a little bit of pressure started on the players, which really intensified yesterday, I guess, when the health secretary, Matt Hancock, came out and said that players, Premier League players, need to take a pay cut and play their part. I think most reasonable people would recognise that there's a big part of a cheap shot in that. And over the last sort of 12 hours, that's developed again. So this morning it came out that the captains of Premier League clubs, all 20 of them, led by Jordan Henderson, have been holding talks for several days now about possible moves to give a substantial amount of money to charity. They're talking a seriously significant amount, with the NHS the most likely beneficiary. But then the Premier League came out in the last hour or so. They've had a big meeting today saying that they're going to ask players to take a 30% pay cut in order to protect jobs, as it was announced the season won't resume until it's safe and appropriate to do so. They've agreed and proposed a combination of conditional reductions and deferrals. They're going to give $125 million to the EFL and the National League, plus $20 million to the National Health Service. The PFA, it seems, are still in negotiations with clubs as to whether it's deferrals or what exactly is going to happen and what's going to happen to the 20%, 30% deduction when it does happen. What's been your take on it all over the last few days, John?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, to begin with, my first focus was on, it was not the football. I was saying, Liverpool have won the league. No one's catching them, let's be realistic. I was winding a few people up on Twitter to begin with, but now let's be realistic. Liverpool won the league, get in the league, stop the league, and come up with a solution. How are you gonna separate the European spots? I saw a solution from someone put to up for the Bundesliga, where there'd be no relegations, there'd be promotion still, and you've got to decide who's promoted. There'd be no parachute payments. Can you use that money to help the leagues below? And then if there's no relegations in the leagues below, then it'll just, everyone will step up one on the ladder that are in the promotion spot. But it's organising that, and it's people making decisions, and it's a lot more complicated than you or I will ever know. Now, the reason that won't happen is to do with money, and for me it's down to money. It's down to the Premier League, whoever pays the TV rights. There'll be a contract of clubs, you'll have to play a certain amount of games. Now, if the clubs vote to stop the league, they won't get the money. So they're pushing on. This league's got to continue until it's finalised. Was it the Belgium league last night that stopped? Mm. That gave someone the league title. There'll be other leagues. And the longer we go on to this, it's just getting pushed back, and it's a conversation that gets brought up again. And how far do you go? When do you say there's a cut-off point where you can't play the season? Are you going to, realistically, it's going to be weeks, months before season can start. You can't go straight into football. The lads have been self-isolating, have been away from the club. You can't go straight into playing a game. Now, there'll be a few lads that really look after themselves, and there'll be other lads that won't be. So it'll be completely different. So there's so many variables that can throw themselves up, and you know, it's easy for me to say, look, stop the league, name them as champions, give them European spots, but there's a lot of complications in that. Then getting on to wages. Now, footballers are an easy target. Now, I'm not saying for 1 minute the wages that I received as a player or players receive now is not huge. I'm not defending it. It's just what the market dictates, and that's what players earn. And that's what they earn in other jobs. It's other things. And there's people that earn more being a banker. There's people that earn more doing other things. Other sports people earn a lot more than footballers. That's what they earn. So they get taxed on what they earn as well. So Matt Hancock coming out and saying something yesterday is... I didn't really understand it. I got my back up a little bit, and I'm not a player. And I know no player can come out and say anything now because the media scrutiny it'll bring on them, it'll look like they're saying it because they're backing up the wage. And I'm not receiving that wage anymore as a player, so I feel like I can say it, and no one's really sticking up for them. PFA are in negotiations. I haven't heard anything from the PFA chairman. I think someone needs to say exactly as a player what is happening and what they will be doing, and it's an easy target for me, a very, very easy target to look at Premier League football and say, yes, you should be taking pay cuts. Well, I just did it very, very quick. Maths, I told you I was a good maths teacher, did a very quick maths lesson yesterday with myself. Said the average Premier League salary was £3 million a year. 45% of that goes on tax, plus your national insurance, so it's more. So most players are played through a PAYE system. Now, people say they get old, they get paid through limited companies. They don't. Some players did years ago. There'll still be some players in their mid-rights, and that'll be the top players, and they're the elite players, if you like. And fair enough, because their image is worth a lot. They might get paid through image rights. The majority of players will be through PAYE. Some more people used the image rights scheme years ago. I'm one that never did. And the government closed the loophole for players and made them pay back a lot of tax a few years ago now, I think. So majority of players are through PAYE system, so they get taxed 45%. So on £3 million a year, the average salary of a Premier League player, and 500 players in the Premier League, if you take 25-man squads of every team, that's £1.4 million in tax per player. Now, if you take players to take a 50% cut, well, you're cutting the tax by how much? So if you get £7 billion in tax a year, you're going to get, if you take a 50% wage, but you're going to get half of that again, £3.5 billion. If you take more of a pay cut that you want them to, and it annoyed me because it's an easy target for footballers, because the government very, very easily, they like doing popular things to make themselves look popular. It's great, and people don't really understand, but that's a little bit on the maths on the side of it. How about they call out the airline bosses who take £60 million dividends and then furlough all the staff and ask for government bailouts, or the tax exiles who own companies in Britain, who don't pay any tax in Britain or England or wherever, whatever country you're in, and then ask the government to bail them out. Or the bankers who the government bailed out years ago, how about asking them to take a huge pay cut? But it's easy to pick on a footballer. But yeah, footballers contribute a lot to the economy with the taxes that they already pay. And on top of that, I know most footballers I know do a lot for charity, give a lot to charity and do a lot for the communities, but they don't shout about it. They do it quietly. So to jump on the bandwagon of, yeah, you should be taking a pay cut, well, you've got to realise that the implications of taking a pay cut. And my question yesterday I put on my Twitter is, what would you prefer? Would you prefer taking a pay cut? Would you prefer footballers take an 80% pay cut and reduce the tax bill by billions? Or would you prefer to keep them on the same wages and pay more tax? And that was a simple question. No one really answered it. Everyone had their opinion on it. No one really answered it. What would you prefer? Because everyone likes to call it out because it's an easy target, but no one actually gives you an answer to it. And that was my little rant there.
It was great, though. It was great. I think there's a couple of issues that kind of immediately spring to mind. It's the owners of the clubs in particular who have amassed massive fortunes and have seen their fortunes increase exponentially over the last number of years through football. So, you know, if you even take the value of Manchester United, how it has gone up in value and how much money the Glazers have taken out of it, that's obviously a slightly different issue. But almost to an owner across the Premier League, the Premier League owners have mostly made a lot of money out of owning a football team, and mostly the Premier League teams are very profitable. So the bit where they're all laying off or not paying, where some of those clubs are not paying their staff, that sticks in the craw when there's no sense of them looking after their players. And it was the other thing you did on Twitter, was you pointed out that Stoke had guaranteed that they were going to pay all their staff until August, I think it was. So it can be done. These clubs do have the finances to actually look after the people at the clubs. Now, if the players had to take some pay cut to help the clubs pay for those people and everybody was in it together, then this might have been an easier way to navigate. And it just brings me right back to the whole point that it hasn't been very well managed by the players. They are up against the spin doctors in the government, but they've got their own spin doctors. They've got their own leadership, and we should have seen stronger, I think, some public sentiment or some public statement from the PFA, maybe a bit earlier in this whole process, because they seem to have been outflanked a bit.
A few issues there. The first one, what I didn't say before, if the players do take a pay cut, it doesn't go to anyone else apart from back to the club, back to the owners, who still can ask for the other staff to be furloughed, just the way the government has set it up. So it doesn't make any difference to anyone apart from the reducing the tax bill. Now, for me, I don't think it can be done. Why don't you take the players' tax, your 45% at source, and look after the people in the club? And this is a far greater amount than what the people in the club will earn. So it will cover everything. People in the club, your local community, around the club, your local hospitals, your local GPs, anyone that's in need around the club. Instead of paying the government the full 45% tax, use that for that. But it can't be done. I'm pretty sure it can't be done. So the club's allowing the staff. Now, I'm pretty sure if I was at a club, my first thought when all this was going on, if staff were talking about getting laid off, would be, right, we need to look after the staff. It's a very small amount as a group of players to look after them for 3-4 months compared to what wages as a player you'll be on. Let's look after them. That would have been my first thought as a player, and I would have had meetings, probably more difficult because you're not in a club, so you would have rang your captain, whether the captain may be, your PFA rep. You'll have a group of players that'll really take charge of it. So it's a hard one for players in terms of players aren't going to come out and say anything. Players are PAY of a club, so it's the clubs to approach the players and say it, and say we've approached them and said it. If no one says anything, then nothing's going to happen. Now, as a player, I said if I was at a club, my first thought would have been that, and you may approach the chief executive of the club or the owners of the club and say, look, this is what we want to do, or we want to make an offer, we want to make a gesture to help the players, but to help the staff that are going to be laid off or furloughed. Now, yes, Stoke City came out. Stoke City came out before there was any government scheme and said it. Only because I knew through the WhatsApp group that with the academy was on. I was still on the WhatsApp group, and it was full of praise for how the owners had dealt with it. Communicating with them immediately and just said they're all going to be looked after until August. Well, that's a few months away, and we'll know pretty much more where we are further down. I know non-playing staff, so that's it's a great gesture from the club, but that's Stoke City. That's always been Stoke City. You should always, for me, you should always look after the people that are the life and soul of the club. And far beyond players, people have been at the club far longer and will be far longer after players. They're the real people of the club. Of any football club, the people that are behind the scenes and work there, and that's their life, and the fans are there every week, but the people that are in the club, they're the football club. That's what makes a football club. Players will come and go, and your average time at a club will be very short in terms of real term careers for everyone else. So yes, you should be looked after, and clubs should be immediately looking after them, not using the government scheme when you can afford to pay. But clubs will do that because that's the nature of what some clubs are like. They'll use the scheme to claim 80% back because people will still be getting paid 80% of the wage.
Jonathan, this is obviously an incredibly fast-moving situation, but should the players and the Players Association have got out in front of this? Because football
That was the other point, wasn't it? PFA. So the PFA, I had an issue with the... I was on the managing committee a few years ago... up until I finished playing, because I thought I couldn't be anymore when I finished playing. When all it was going on the past couple of years with the inquiry and everything. So one issue I had with the PFA, I know the work the PFA do behind the scenes, and I know they never ever promote themselves from what they do. So I went through the packs of the grants they pay out ex-players and the operations they pay for, mortgages and rent and any bills people... I go through, it was like hundreds and thousands of pages of what they do for ex-players. But they never promote it. And when it all happened and everyone was jumping on the bandwagon and bashing the PFA, I had to say, you have to start promoting yourselves. They didn't have anyone in that position to spin that in the favour and make them, you know, look like they are actually doing something, because you don't know what they're doing with the players' union. Players probably should know more what they're doing, but the players' union, so they look after the players. So Mike in the street, who works for another job, shouldn't really know what the PFA is doing, because that's not his union. It's a footballer's union, so they don't... He should get ahead of it, and I know for a fact he would have been in every meeting with the Premier League, every meeting with the EFL, been on the phone non-stop, and I know for a fact that there's a new chief executive in the Premier League, there's a new one in the EFL, there's a new one in the FA, and I know for a fact he would have all been in touch with Gordon constantly at the PFA, talking about what's happening, and they are non-stop just from being in touch with a few of them there. Obviously, I'm not a player anymore, but I still communicate with a few of them. So, yes, they could have got ahead of it, but doesn't mean they're not doing anything behind the scenes. I haven't heard anything from Ben Perkins, the PFA chairman, but he was quick to jump on everything to do with the inquiries. Yet I haven't heard anything to do with the players. He should be coming out and saying something, possibly, yes. A lot of work is going on behind the scenes on behalf of the players through the PFA, and I'm sure I know of it, and I'm sure more than I know what's going on. They're very, very busy.
But they really should have got out in front of that. If you're a Premier League footballer and you're seeing what's happened over the last 24 hours, you should probably be pretty pissed off with your representative body, because like they've lost whatever, and maybe it is all spin, whatever battle there is for hearts and minds. Football isn't the same as any other industry. It's not like an airline industry. People have a connection with clubs and players that's deeper, more emotional than any other type of industry. And they really, you feel, should have got out in front of this earlier in the week and said, no matter what happens, as Premier League footballers, we are going to ensure that no staff at this club lose their job. If we need to take a cut, we'll do that. Now, maybe it is optics. Maybe it is all optics, all of this. But because of what Matt Hancock did yesterday, he's done, I would imagine, pretty lasting damage to the reputation of Premier League footballers that really didn't need to happen.
Yeah, now... It's a difficult one. You're saying the PFA should get out ahead of it, but then each club is its own entity as well. I can't speak for what's happening and who they're speaking to, and they're speaking to every captain of the Premier League club. I can't speak. I would hope they would be. But each club is its own bubble in a way. So you'll have Liverpool, you'll have Manchester United, Everton, you'll have Stoke City in the Championship. You'll have every... little bubble. So each one will have their own way of dealing with their club, with their owner, with their chief exec. Now, what the government did is allowed clubs, I think, with this scheme. I don't know the ins and outs of it. I don't know where you've got to be on the scale. Are you a club that was making profit that can still allow employees not losing the job? They're on 80% of the wages until they can go back to work. So the work's still there. That's for allowing it. The meaning of it is so you're guaranteed work when you're coming back from it. You're not laid off. You're getting 80% of your wages. Now it's up to the employer if they want to top it up to 100%. I know that. So through the government doing that scheme has allowed clubs to jump on that bandwagon, I'd say, which is wrong if you're making a profit, but they're using everything they can to try and make money because it's still a business. And a lot of other businesses, apart from football, will be doing the same thing if they can. But as a player, as I said, if I was at a club, my first thought would have been, you've got to look after the staff. You've got to look after X, Y, and Z, him, her. Even if it was one player looking after a member of staff in the training ground, there's a lot more in the club, but the PFA, yes, they could have made a statement, but they're not in control of every individual club or captain or group of players or individual player. So I don't know on that one. I don't know on that one. But yes, with Matt Hancock coming out and saying his piece yesterday or replying to a question, it's not done great, especially when I said all those other things. You've got airline bosses, high street chain bosses that were billions doing the same thing, yet they're taking huge dividends. It always comes on footballers, as cricketers, as rugby players, as F1 drivers who don't live in the country because they don't want to pay tax, bankers who earn a lot more than footballers, some of them. Has he said that? Is that because it's in London and it's not a dumb thing to say about the bankers should be taking the big pay cut? I don't know. It's easy to pick on a working class board and say to working class, but you should be doing this, when realistically they do already contribute a lot already, and behind the scenes they do anyway.
Just one last question about the potential return. Wayne Rooney, in his column for the Times a couple of weeks ago, was really against the idea of playing behind closed doors because it felt like you were going to be guinea pigs, and obviously that completely disappeared around the world. No one now thinks it was a good idea at all. We're going to, again, as the situation moves, we learn new things. If there was a way of making the Festival of Football behind closed doors work with teams in quarantine for long enough to make sure that everybody who was playing and all the support staff was safe, as a player, is that something that you would consider doing? Or is that something that you would say, no, until there are antibodies, until there's a vaccine, we don't really want to be at the forefront of experimenting with a way of returning football to, essentially, to TV, because that's what it would be. It would obviously be behind closed doors.
It would be for TV so people can get the money in. That's the reason they'll be pushing it now. If it's not safe to do so, then if the fans can't go to, number one, if football without fans, it's not the same. The fans make the football. There's no chance the Premier League or the Sky Sports will be paying the fees to the Premier League if it was empty stadiums anyway. So fans make the football. As a player, fans make the football. And without fans, football's nothing for me. Not at all. So that would be a no-no anyway. I wouldn't like to do that anyway. Now, in terms of playing, when making sure, I don't think he can make sure everyone's safe. So what if the fans can't go in and the stadiums can't open and all the support staff are there? Bear in mind the support staff you're taking first aid people and ambulances. They've got to be at the grounds for insurance reasons, and there'll be fans outside the ground, so there'll have to be people there to make that safe. If it's not safe for them to go and watch a match, it's not safe for the players to be playing on the pitch. Say it did go ahead, say it did happen, and it wasn't completely safe, but, you know, we're pretty sure, you know, everything's safe. You know, it's a contact sport, but pretty sure everything's safe. And then one player caught coronavirus, gave it to his elderly family member, and they died. What would happen then? I'm talking extreme level now, which could happen. If you ask players to play now and that could happen, someone had it, didn't know they had it, passed it on, and it went like that, or I'm saying even elderly members of family, because the age range is varying now from what I know. It's not just elderly people, it's younger people you're hearing of different ages. But I don't think you can make it completely safe. So I don't think as a player you can say, yes, we can go ahead with that. And you're not helping anyone by going ahead. The only thing you're doing is completing a fixture list, complete a contract so people can get paid the TV rights or whatever that they do. Because apart from that, it's not helping anyone. You might be able to watch it on TV, but apart from that, it's not helping anyone. It's not doing anything to help the stop of it or the spread of it or anything like that. So for me, that'll always be a no until it's completely safe for a full stadium, or not a full stadium, for an open stadium for fans to go into and watch a match. Until that's safe, I don't think you can say ask players to play behind closed doors.
All right. You've been great with your time, Johnny. Are you a box sets man? Are you escaping from this something? We're asking people for recommendations. Do you have any recommendations for people to...
I'm watching Ozark at the minute on Netflix.
It's good, isn't it?
So, yeah, it's good. It's good. I've just finished, I think season 3 got released last week. I've just finished it. So, I'm out myself at the moment. someone recommended one called Love Is Blind, and it was horrendous.
Ah, so Johnny!
Don't watch that one. but apart from that, I'm happy to take any recommendations if you want to pass them on.
I recommend Better Call Saul. I'm only catching up on it now.
Okay.
Really good.
Get a good book. Get Joe Rogan's podcast. Listen to a few Joe Rogan's podcasts. Very good. Get a few good books, and that'll tide you over.
What books are good?
What books are good? Oh, let me look. What was I reading there? I was reading one called Graham Hancock. If you search up Graham Hancock, Magicians of the Gods. I'll let you look it up and have a good look at it. But you know, any books really, any reading's good, isn't it? It's easy to switch on the TV and watch nothing, and then you've probably wasted a few hours of your life, and you're not educating yourself one bit. But if you get a good book, then there's nothing wrong with that.
Good, solid advice to finish up on. Jonathan Walters, you're a gent. Thanks a million for joining us.
No problem. Cheers, guys.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.